I'm Rob Sivak, in for Tom Hall, and this is Midday. Today, as we mark the 112th day of the Trump administration, it's another installment of Living Questions, our monthly series in which we explore the role of religion in the public sphere. What impact has the Trump presidency had on the climate for religious expression and tolerance in America? Three faith community leaders, John Gehring, Catholic Program Director at Faith and Public Life, Daniel Kotzenberg, Rabbi at the Beth Am Synagogue in Reservoir Hill, and Imam Mohammed Bashar Arafat, President of the Islamic Affairs Council of Maryland, join me to talk about the changes they've witnessed during the Trump administration and the changes they see down the road. Then theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins us with a review of Chesapeake Shakespeare Company's revival of the 1960 classic, The Fantastics. Midday starts right after the news. Welcome to Midday. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Midday senior producer Rob Sivak, sitting in for Tom Hall. Our show begins with another edition of our monthly series called Living Questions, a series produced in collaboration with the ICJS, the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies, here in Baltimore, that explores the role of religion in the public sphere. On today's program, we're going to be looking at the impact of the Trump administration in its first 112 days in office on religious freedom and tolerance in the United States. Much has been said and written about the polarization in American political dialogue since the November presidential election, but we're going to focus on how Donald Trump's election victory has affected the way diverse religious groups interact with the larger society, and how presidential actions may have improved or worsened the climate of religious freedom, one of America's bedrock values. Joining me to examine these questions are three leaders in their respective faith communities. John Gehring is Catholic Program Director at Faith in Public Life, which describes itself as a nonprofit strategy center advancing faith in the public square. He's also a contributing editor to Commonweal magazine and is the author of The Francis Effect, a radical pope's challenge to the American Catholic Church, published in 2015. His analyses have been featured in The Washington Post, The New York Times, USA Today, and The National Catholic Reporter. Joining me here in studio, John Gehring joins us from NPR Studios in Washington. Mr. Gehring, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Joining me here in the studio is Rabbi Daniel Kotzenberg. He's been the rabbi at the Beth Am Synagogue in Reservoir Hill here in Baltimore since 2010. He's a fellow in the Rabbinic Leadership Initiative of the Shalom Hartman Institute in Jerusalem, and is a contributing author to Keeping Faith in Rabbis, a community conversation about rabbinical education. He's also a trustee of the ICJS. Rob Daniel, thank you for coming.
Good to be here, Rob. Thank you.
Also with me in the studio is Imam Mohammed Bashar Arafat, a native of Syria who has lived in the United States for nearly 30 years. He serves as the president of the Islamic Affairs Council of Maryland, and he's the president and founder of the Civilizations Exchange and Cooperation Foundation, a nonprofit group that provides religious and cultural training, consultation, and orientation services for foreign exchange students and for the staff of the State Department's Youth Exchange Study Program. Imam Arafat, welcome to you.
Thank you very much for having me again.
And we invite our listeners to join the conversation as well. Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or email us at midday@wypr.org or send us a tweet at @MiddayTomHall. So, gentlemen, I wanted to begin by asking you if you could provide a kind of general comments about the climate that you see in the months since the Trump administration took office. I begin with you, John.
Sure. My organization, Faith in Public Life, works with an interfaith network of clergy and rabbis and imams across the country. And, you know, we're really seeing renewed energy, I think, to speak out in a prophetic way against the demonization of immigrants and Muslims, all these terrible, inhumane deportations that are breaking up families, you know, the immoral efforts by Republicans to dismantle health care reform, which is a right, not a privilege. And so, you know, we're seeing it certainly a challenging time out there. There's not a lot of good news. But it's also a time when the religious community, I think, is really stepping up. And I see a lot of emboldened faith leaders really playing a unique role. And so, you know, from our point of view, I think the hopeful message is there's really kind of this revival, if you will, of moral resistance in the face of so many threats to human dignity coming from this administration. And as a Catholic, you know, I see Pope Francis really saying clearly that real Christians don't build walls, they build bridges. You know, I hear a pope that says, you can't call yourself a Christian and then slam the door in the face of refugees. So it's a challenging time, but it's also a time of opportunity.
Yeah. Imam Arafat, some general comments.
Well, the same. I think the Muslim community, you know, tried now to become more and more engaged. I have seen the interfaith activities also increasing the outreach to the Jewish and the Christian community, as well as the non-Abrahamic faith traditions, is also increasing. Because especially for the younger generation, you know, who were born in America from immigrant parents, they did not hear these kind of things recently. Mm-hmm. So really for them, it was a shocking news. On campuses, I'm seeing the MSAs, Muslim Student Associations, doing more activities, the mosques. I myself becoming invited even more from different churches to talk about that. And what is really makes me comfortable to see the reaction of the American people. Forget about, you know, the politics and Trump and the administration and this rhetoric. I'm pleased to see the reaction. I mean, those who came to the airports after the ban, almost 90% are non-Muslims. And that's big difference between what happened after 9/11 and what is happening after the ban. And that shows you wonderful positive signs within the American society. For me as an imam, I have seen the trends both ways. And I'm really very much encouraged with the response. Last week, I was in one of the churches in Arundel County talking about the Sultan and the Saint. This is one of the programs under Al-Bashir Seminary that I work with here in Baltimore and in Silver Spring. The response is really amazing. Yes, there are discouraging incidents. The tone is very negative, but the response from the American people is really more than what you think.
Rabbi Berg?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's wonderful that we're focusing on the positive response to these phenomena. And absolutely, I have also been drawn into opportunities to stand with my Muslim brothers and sisters, Christians and others, shoulder to shoulder against the Muslim ban in support of immigrants and refugees. We've done some things at the synagogues and actions around town. But of course, the reason that we're even having these opportunities is because of the rise in expressed hatred and animosity that I believe is at least in part a result of this election cycle and this particular administration's rhetoric and the rhetoric surrounding the administration. So that is distressing. And we need to take a close look at what is happening. Why are certain forces and voices feeling emboldened in this moment to say things that they may have believed for a long time but never felt that they had a license to express?
Yes. That's an interesting point. The empowerment that the election of Donald Trump appears to have given to some previously marginalized groups, particularly nationalist groups and white supremacy groups, much has been said about them. And I wondered, John Gehring in Washington, if you could recount the experience that you had attending a gathering in Washington earlier this year. At the Trump International Hotel, actually in Washington D.C. to be specific, there was I guess it underscored in the article you wrote for the Washington Post, it seemed to underscore a new enthusiasm among Christian conservatives, particularly that there's a new era of religious freedom that has been set loose by the Trump administration. Could you talk about that that gathering?
Sure. It was a very interesting gathering. It was $1,200 a ticket. It was kind of billed as a private strategy meeting for Catholic conservatives in the Trump era. So I went in sort of a fly on the wall to kind of understand how Christians conservatives are approaching this political moment. And I think what was most distressing to me was there was a lot of cheerleading around this administration in terms of sort of the opening saying, well, the Trump administration is pro-life. And as a Catholic who understands the complexity of what it means to be pro-life, you know, to call an administration that's cracking down on immigrants and driving, separating families, not taking care of our environment, all kinds of policies that are really anathema to traditional Christian values, that was very disheartening. But certainly from their point of view, they see an opening here with the Supreme Court, with issues like abortion, you know, rolling back LGBT rights and other things. So from their point of view, there's a real opening right now over these next 4 years. But I think that comes with a cost. I think that puts short-term politics ahead of traditional gospel values in terms of how we treat each other. And so, yeah, that was the article that I wrote. And it was very illuminating to kind of have a peek into that strategy session.
You wrote in the Washington Post piece, progressives and conservatives must work harder to find common ground and rescue religious liberty debates from the culture war. Talk of the devil and framing the fight as apocalyptic showdowns between the forces of light and darkness clearly don't get us there. I thought that was an interesting observation.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, these are complicated debates, and I think one thing that the religious community hopefully can do is model a different kind of discourse around how do we balance two goods. I mean, religious freedom, religious liberty, religious conscience is a good, and so are the rights of diverse Americans in a pluralistic society. And so these are complicated moral and legal issues, but I think, you know, the faith community has a real role to model a different kind of discourse and bring people together. And we're not going to do that by talking about sort of the devil and Armageddon has come, this very polarized language that I think pushes people apart.
But Imam Arafat, certainly the administration's proposed travel bans that stipulate restrictions on certain Muslim majority countries and that put a freeze on the 120-day freeze on Syrian refugees coming into the United States. Certainly that has an impact on public perceptions about not only the Muslim world, but about Muslim citizens living in the United States. How do you see the travel bans playing into this particular climate?
If you travel outside the United States and see the perception of America today when you visit different countries, whether Muslim countries minority or majority Muslim countries, you will be really sad to see how this ban is played over there. Our perception as Americans is really impacted right now by this ban that, thank God, it's stopped, even though there are so many attempts to bring it back. But has been having this kind of negative effects in the United States and internationally. I have heard from students who were supposed to come to our conference from the Gulf area. They are not part of these six countries, but still they canceled their participation in our conference because they were afraid that the girls are going to be harassed at the airports and something like that. People are canceling their even, tourist trips mm-hmm. here. Students are even not those who are coming to our conferences. Those who want to study in the United States are canceling. Mm-hmm. That is impacting our relation with the rest of the Muslim world. even that is giving empowerment to nationalism in Europe, as you have seen in different elections, or the rise of this kind of hate and anti-immigrant rhetoric in Europe. And I'm always, you know, asking myself, whose responsibility to raise the voice of cohesiveness, interfaith, respect for diversity, respect for cultural and religious diversity, calling for, you know, getting together, not to separate us from one another. We are living in it's no longer a global village. This is a big, big room right now. Yeah. With the social media, it's no longer even a small village. This is one house right now.
Yeah. Imam Mohammed Bashar Arafat is president of the Islamic Affairs Council of Maryland. Daniel Kotzenberg is rabbi at the Beth Am Synagogue in Reservoir Hill. And John Gehring is Catholic program director at Faith in Public Life. And we're going to have to take a short break now. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion of how the Trump administration has influenced the state of religious freedom and tolerance in the United States, and how faith communities are talking to each other about the new administration. We'd like to hear from you. Since Mr. Trump took office, is the climate for religious expression in America any better, worse, unchanged? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 410-662-8780 or email us at midday@wypr.org. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back to Midday. I'm Rob Sivak, sitting in for Tom Hall. Coming up tomorrow on the Friday News Wrap, guest host Nathan Sterner reviews the week's top local, national, and international developments. Joining Nathan will be Julie Rovner, health policy correspondent for Kaiser Health News, Terry Ann Scott, a professor of history at Hood College in Frederick, and political reporter Charles Robinson of Maryland Public Television. Hope you'll tune in. If you're just joining us, we're talking about how the election of President Donald Trump has influenced the state of religious freedom and tolerance in the United States. My guests this afternoon are John Gehring, the Catholic Program Director at Faith in Public Life, a nonprofit strategy group for the faith community. He's also a contributing editor to Commonweal magazine and the author of The Francis Effect, A Radical Pope's Challenge to the American Catholic Church. Mr. Gehring joins us from NPR Studios in Washington. With me in the studio is Daniel Kotzenberg. He's been rabbi at the Beth Am Synagogue in Reservoir Hill since 2010, and he's a fellow in the Rabbinic Leadership Initiative of the Shalom Hartman Institute in Jerusalem. And Imam Mohammed Bashar Arafat, a native of Syria who's lived in the U.S. for 3 decades and who now serves as president of the Islamic Affairs Council of Maryland. He's also founder and president of the Civilizations Exchange and Cooperation Foundation, a nonprofit group that provides religious and cultural training. You're welcome to be part of our conversation. Do give us a call at 410-662-8780 or email us at midday@wypr.org or send us a tweet at Midday Tom Hall. Gentlemen, I guess, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about doing was talking about the this rise in hate crimes and certainly the spike has been dramatic. I think recently read that the Anti-Defamation League, a nonprofit Jewish activist group, reported that anti-Semitic incidents in the United States are up sharply since the November election, including an 86% increase in incidents like bullying and vandalism since the beginning of the year. When we look at these incidents, you know, this is a relative handful of people in the national context, but they seem to be doing a lot of damage to the sense of trust and interfaith respect. Rabbi Berg, from your perspective, what is the antidote for these kinds of acts? How do we deal with them?
Yeah, I mean, we're absolutely seeing this uptick in incidents, words that are said, trolling online. I was at an event several weeks back because a swastika had been drawn on a sign near a synagogue and the Jewish Museum of Maryland in Jonestown here. So we're seeing it in the Jewish community. We're certainly seeing a rise in Islamophobia. We're seeing a rise in all kinds of hate activities and hate-filled rhetoric. Look, I mean, I think in order to respond, we have to understand the phenomenon. Some of it, I believe, is tied to the administration and a sense among nativist white nationalists that they now have license to say things in public that maybe they would have only shared in private or anonymously on the internet. There's also, we have to remember, forces that are happening both on the right and on the left in this country. So with regard to anti-Semitism per se, we'll see, you know, more traditional right leaning expressions of anti-Semitism in the form of hate speech, the terrible kinds of memes that were sent to Julia Yaffe, the journalist, when she wrote an article that was maybe somewhat critical of Melania Trump. But we also see anti-Semitic incidents on the left, right? And that has been coming for years as well. And that could be in the form of putting eviction notices on the dorm rooms of Jewish students at NYU or college in Connecticut and other places in order to express supposedly Palestinian solidarity, but really to marginalize Jewish students in a way that Jews have been marginalized for millennia. We've been kicked out of countless countries and told that we had to leave. That pushes a certain button. So I think the response really has to come from relationship building. It has to come from understanding. Mm-hmm. It has to come as the Imam and I sit here side by side in the studio, getting to know people who disagree with us or who come from a different perspective, trying to understand who they are and what they're about. Mm-hmm. But it also comes from being able to respond courageously in the public square. Mm-hmm. And so we need politicians to stand up and say this sort of rhetoric, this sort of behavior is unacceptable. It took the Trump administration far too long to respond to the rise in anti-Semitism. And in fact, I would say that they fanned the flames of some of that anti-Semitism in the comments of Sean Spicer or even the president himself. And certainly when it comes to Islamophobia, for example, I would see that they're very much at the heart of the rise of Islamophobia, certainly expressing that baser inclination.
Mm-hmm. And John Gehring, you know, there was some confusion about the president's May 4th executive order called Promoting Free Speech and Religious Liberty. It was sort of a vaguely worded signal that the president wished to see some of the curbs on the relationships that religious institutions have with the political process could be relaxed. Some of the tax disincentives, if you're a tax exempt religious organization, you're not supposed to endorse or oppose a particular candidate, for example. And he was suggesting that those curbs should be relaxed. And I think there was also something in the executive order suggesting that the requirements for religious institutions or religious organizations that employ people and have health insurance for their employees ought not to be forced to offer contraception as one of the coverage elements. This executive order got a lot of people sort of buzzing about whether this signaled a shift to bring churches back into an active political engagement in ways that they had not been before. How do you see this, John?
Yeah, I mean, I think just by way of context, I mean, the executive order, if you watch the ceremony in the Rose Garden, was really kind of an elaborate photo op, right? I mean, the substance of the order actually was pretty thin, and a number of conservative religious thinkers were disappointed it didn't go far enough. You know, there was an earlier draft of the executive order that leaked out that would have been much more sweeping, particularly in terms of LGBT rights. And my organization spearheaded a letter that was signed by more than 1,000 faith leaders across the country saying, look, we can defend religious freedom without using religious freedom as a weapon to discriminate and divide. On the Johnson Amendment, which you referenced, I mean, the bottom line is we shouldn't turn our pulpits into super PACs or outreach arms of either political party. And if you look at surveys after survey that have come out, the vast majority of pastors and religious leaders don't want to endorse candidates from the pulpit. And the people in the congregations don't that want they don't want that either. So, I mean, to be clear, I mean, clergy are free to talk about political issues and politics already, and they've been doing that for a very long time. The Johnson Amendment simply bars endorsing specific candidates to maintain that tax exempt status. And so, you know, I think some of the details of all this get blurred. But in many ways, this was a solution in search of a problem. There's no crackdown or silencing of clergy going on. In fact, the Christian Legal, the Alliance Defending Freedom group, which is a Christian conservative legal group, has actually encouraged pastors to send the IRS recordings of themselves delivering highly partisan sermons since 2008 in hopes of triggering an investigation. And during the 8 years of the Obama presidency, the IRS didn't take the bait once on that.
Right. I mean, religious leaders are free to speak their minds and make any comments they wish to make. It's the endorsements or active support of a candidate that would be out of bounds. But even that is not necessarily strictly enforced by the IRS, I would assume.
Correct.
Yeah. I guess the real. The really interesting thing for me about the Trump administration's influence on the religious climate is that it seems to have been a catalyst for a much richer dialogue between faith communities. That there is a sense that there are potential dangers in some of the executive orders and some of the policies of the administration that require all people of faith to come together. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about, and we touched on that at the beginning, the positive dimensions of the influence that the Trump administration has had on how closely you are communicating with members of other faiths. Imam Arafat, you've spoken about this increased dialogue. What specific steps have you taken to reach out and communicate your concerns your interests with other faith communities in Baltimore and perhaps the wider community?
So the initiative of and the program that we started called The Sultan and the Saint, for the Muslims to tell their story about the visit of Saint Francis to the Sultan and how we apply that from 800 years to today and how the faith community should model this courageous step from Saint Francis and how we can apply that on the issues of the refugees today, how we can apply that on the hate speech or hate crimes or the rise of the ignorance toward the other. Because for me, really, the crux of the matter is ignorance. And we have misperception about the other, which is prompting politicians out of ignorance also sometimes, and most of the times, to use these kind of things about Sharia, when they say Sharia law. They don't know what they are talking about, the Sharia law. Who said that we are going to apply, all of these kind of things here or even there where it is applied? There are a lot of scholars who are speaking. They have different opinions. People are picking and choosing verses from the Quran and sharing it with different churches or different places of worship, saying, oh, see, those are the Muslims, so be careful. We are so much in need of constant outreach to put down these walls of stereotype. So for me, we have these conferences. We have now partnered with the Archdiocese of Baltimore. I had a visit before to Archbishop Lurie to have a conference for all the churches in the state of Maryland, and we are going to have that conference very soon in the fall of 2015. We are having conferences for the
2015.
I'm sorry, 2017 in the fall of this year, but also reaching out to the schools, because for me, I have to start with the younger generation, and we are inviting the students to come to our conferences because still America is number one country in cultural exchange programs, and the students need to understand that really America from inside and the behavior of the American people is different than what the politicians are saying. And I have to focus on the positive things we have here in this country, because when I travel and the people ask all kind of questions, I tell them, please don't listen too much to the media, because still inside the outreach I got and the phone calls I'm getting until this day from different churches and different interfaith communities is just unbelievable. And I have really also to speak about that.
Mm-hmm. John Gehring, we've spoken on this program before about perceptions within the Catholic community of Muslims, particularly, that there was a perception anyway among some Catholic scholars that a great deal of education was necessary to overcome some of the strong prejudices against Islam and deep misunderstandings of Islam among the Catholic community. Are you aware of any progressive efforts along these lines to communicate more effectively with between Catholics and Muslims?
Actually, the Cardinal of Chicago, the Catholic Cardinal of Chicago, is involved with very high level discussions with Muslim leaders that is, I believe, coordinated by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and so that is an important initiative. The Bridge Initiative at Georgetown University, I think you may have had one of the folks there on the program in the past, who's doing some very important writing and analysis of how the Catholic community understands Islam. And look, I mean, we know this is a time as a faith community where we have to have each other's backs. And, you know, Catholics used to be a despised minority in this country and faced all kinds of vile stereotypes. It was wrong then, and it's wrong now when we direct that same animus toward our Muslim brothers and sisters. And so I think you're right. A lot of education is needed, and not just sort of theoretical, academic style. I mean, I think encountering people. Pope Francis talks about the power of encounter. And so efforts to bring Catholics and other Christians and Jews together with Muslims to sit down and break bread, that's the power of relationships. And I think that's where we're going to see our most success.
Rabbi Berg, the outreach that we're talking about here has, I think, there's always been an effort by the Jewish community to make itself more clearly understood. It's been complicated, perhaps a bit, by the politics of the Middle East and Israel and all of the. The complexities of that issue, but as a faith, as a religious community, do you want to speak to the any of the efforts that you've been making, particularly in recent months, to reach out to the broader community?
Yeah, I mean, most of the energy that we're seeing at Beth Am Synagogue has been around the issue of immigration and refugees. We spoke about the travel ban a little bit, and we've been doing advocacy against that. We were the first Jewish congregation in Baltimore to sign on to a letter through HIAS, the former Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, which used to advocate on behalf of Jewish refugees and now really speaks out for refugees beyond the Jewish community largely. We actually had Mark Hetfield, the CEO of Highest, come and speak for the second in a three-part series called We Were Strangers Once. The third one is actually this coming Shabbat after services, after Kiddush lunch at about 1 o'clock at Beth Am, where we'll be doing some text study around the issue of immigration. So that's been a great one. We have a congregant, pretty well-known, David Simon, who had an event at Beth Am several weeks back in support of immigrants and refugees and against the travel ban. And we continue to work to lift up our own Jewish stories. After all, we are a nation of immigrants, largely. You know, there were Americans who came here 12 to 14,000 years ago across the Bering Sea on the land bridge, and we call them Native Americans, and there were others who were brought here in slave ships. But the rest of us, for the most part, came here as willing immigrants seeking a better life. Certainly my grandfather did so. He was a Holocaust survivor who left Germany in the late 1930s and was able to come to this country. It was actually very difficult to get into the country in the late 30s because of the immigration policies in those days. And so I feel a personal obligation to tell my own story and to relate that story to the experience of those who are coming from Syria or other places around the world, to say we cannot vilify, we cannot demonize the other just because they have a different faith tradition. We have an obligation to continue to live out the best American values. And this country is a country that's meant to be a blending of different nationalities and different perspectives.
And Imam Arafat, you know, you with your international perspective, particularly because you travel so much and you work with people who are from other countries, The notion that America's image as the city on the shining beacon for the rest of the world in terms of these values of freedom and religious tolerance is at risk in some people's view. How do you see down the road this perception changing? Do you think that it can be rescued by the faith community itself?
I think the faith community today has an obligation to stand up and raise its voice to help the politician to correct their narratives, because that is really damaging for all of us. We are part of the world. We are not all of the world. And that, you know, slogan, America First, has been played so negatively overseas and around the world. When I was in Indonesia just 3 weeks ago, you know, people were saying, what about Indonesia First? And of course, we have heard that in Europe the same. But I just would like also to mention that Ramadan is almost like 2 weeks away from today. And this is a wonderful opportunity for the people to call and be invited for our iftar and to get to know their neighbors closely.
Imam Arafat, I'm going to have to stop you there. That's all the time we have, I'm afraid. Imam Mohammed Bashar Arafat is president of the Islamic Affairs Council of Maryland and founder and president of the Civilizations Exchange and Cooperation Foundation. John Gehring is Catholic Program Director at Faith in Public Life, a nonprofit strategy group for the faith community. He's also a contributing editor to Commonweal magazine and the author of The Francis Effect, A Radical Pope's Challenge to the American Catholic Church. He joined us from NPR Studios in Washington. And Daniel Kotzenberg is rabbi at the Beth Am Synagogue in Reservoir Hill, a position he's held since 2010. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Coming up after a short break, theater critic J. Wynn Russick joins us with a review of the Chesapeake Shakespeare Company's revival of the 1960 classic, The Fantastics. Stay with us.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.